All right, buckle up, because today we're diving into some seriously wild territory, even for us.
We're talking Nazi UFOs, right? Gotta love a good mystery.
Exactly. And this one's got it all.
Secret inventions, Cold War paranoia.
Enough whispers and speculation to fuel 1,000 conspiracy theories. And honestly, who doesn't love a good conspiracy theory every now and then?
Especially when we get to go beyond just like grainy photos and
Yeah.
spooky stories,
That's what
right?
I'm talking about. We're lucky to have you here to help unpack all of this because, let's be real, you've really dug into this stuff.
Well, I got some excerpts from Maurizio Verga's Flying Saucers from Naziland.
That title
It
alone.
grabs you, right? Plus, we've got this whole other document all about guys claiming to have invented flying saucers back in the early 50s.
So, where do we even start with all this? It's like stepping into a time machine back to the Cold War, right?
It's like 1950. Picture it. The world's still recovering from World War II, reeling, really, from the atomic bomb.
Right, the dawn of the Cold War, everything's tense.
People were kind of primed for conspiracy theories, you know? Fascinated by new technology, what it could do, especially if it was kept secret.
And boom, right on cue, you have these UFO sightings popping up in the news. People wanted answers.
Enter these guys claiming to have the inside scoop on flying saucers.
Okay, but hold on. Before we get to those guys, we got to talk about Donald Kehoe, right? Didn't he kind of kickstart this whole UFOs or aliens idea?
Exactly. I mean, back then, most people figured UFOs were probably some new aircraft, right? Experimental stuff. Maybe the Soviets were behind it.
Secret weapons and all that.
But Kehoe, he was a former Marine Corps pilot, so people listened.
Yeah.
He had this article come out in 49, and he put this idea out there. Extraterrestrials.
Which was a pretty radical thought for the time, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But his background, it gave him this air of credibility, you know, and
Yeah.
it definitely resonated with a public that was already on edge.
And boom, suddenly everyone's looking at the skies thinking, aliens.
And we can't forget about the role of the media in all this. Newspapers especially, they ate this stuff up.
Headlines about flying saucers, alien invasions, it was all selling like hotcakes.
They were feeding off each other, the stories and the public interest. More sightings, more headlines, wilder claims. It just kept escalating.
So you've got this perfect storm brewing. You've got a public primed for the extraordinary, a media frenzy feeding that hunger, and a world still grappling with the very real threat of terrifying new technologies.
And right on cue, into this mix walks our cast of characters, these self-proclaimed flying saucer inventors.
These weren't exactly household names, though, right?
Not quite. You've got Brooks, this German engineer, Nils Christensen, who claimed he invented, well, everything, and even a Brazilian dentist who insisted he dreamt up the flying saucer first.
A dentist. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. And they all, in their own way, tapped into this atmosphere of uncertainty and technological anxiety.
Speaking of which, Brooks claimed he actually saw experimental flights of these disc-shaped aircraft in Germany, like back in 44.
It all plays into those rumors of secret Nazi technology, doesn't it?
Like Hitler had this whole arsenal of wonder weapons stashed away somewhere. It's like something out of a movie.
It really is. And those kinds of stories, they tapped into a deep well of fear, especially with the Cold War heating up.
Speaking of, didn't one of our other inventors end up in a bit of hot water himself? Didn't Christensen get himself thrown in prison?
Ah, yes. Nils Christensen, a character if ever there was one.
Yeah.
And yeah, he ended up in prison in Brazil, of all places. But his story is a trip. It kind of changes over time, like he was trying to one-up everyone else.
So what was his story? What did he invent exactly?
Okay, so at first, he claimed he designed this flying saucer for the Nazis, an anti-aircraft weapon.
Gone.
Picture this, a radio-controlled disc, right? It's got these propellers spinning in opposite directions. And get this, it showers enemy planes with flammable liquid.
Flammable liquid. That's awfully vague for a supposed genius, isn't it?
You'd think, right? But here's the thing. A lot of these claims were incredibly vague, almost deliberately so, yet people ate it up.
So Christensen, he starts with this flammable liquid weapon, but it doesn't end there, does it?
Oh, no, not at all. See, as people started getting really interested in the idea of UFOs being alien spaceships, Christensen, he ups his game.
Had to stay relevant in the flying saucer game, right?
Exactly. Now, suddenly, his saucer isn't just some anti-aircraft weapon. It
Yeah.
can travel into space, reach incredible altitudes, stay up in the air for days, and it can carry atomic bombs.
Talk about an upgrade. Did anyone ever call him out on these increasingly, let's be honest, ridiculous claims?
You see, that's the thing. Nobody really had concrete information. No prototypes, no blueprints, no reliable witnesses to back up any of these stories. So Christensen, he just kept spinning his yarn.
Okay, but let's zoom out for a second. We've got Kehoe pushing this extraterrestrial theory, the media going crazy, and these so-called inventors popping up left and right. What else was going on in the world that might have fueled this whole obsession with Nazi flying saucers?
Well, it was the 50s, right? The Cold War was in full swing. You had the U.S. and the Soviet Union locked in this nuclear standoff. There was this very real, constant fear of another war, a war that could end the world.
So people were on edge, looking for any sign of a new threat. It makes sense, right?
Absolutely. And what could be more terrifying than the Nazis, with their history, with their ambition, having passed on some secret weapon to the Soviets?
Like something out of a James Bond film.
Except this wasn't fiction. You had real-life figures, like Wernher von Braun, a former Nazi rocket scientist, now working for NASA.
It's like everything that was already terrifying about the world just got amplified.
And then you add these stories about flying saucers. And it's no wonder people were ready to believe anything.
And we haven't even gotten to the Brazilian dentist yet.
Ah, yes. Sebastião Fernandes Lima. He really adds a whole other dimension to this story. He wasn't content with just claiming he invented the flying saucer. He insisted he did it first.
So was he in it for the fame, the glory, or did he genuinely believe he'd beaten everyone to the punch?
It seems like, for Lima, it was more about legacy than anything else. He wasn't aligning himself with any government, any ideology. He just wanted credit where credit was due, at least in his mind.
The original flying saucer visionary, a Brazilian dentist. Who would have guessed? But did he, or Christensen for that matter, ever offer any proof? Any real evidence to back up their claims?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And unfortunately, the answer is a resounding no. But hey, that doesn't mean their stories weren't entertaining.
That's for sure. We've got intrigue, mystery, a touch of Cold War paranoia. What more could you ask for?
Don't forget the Brazilian dentist. But seriously, there are layers to this story that we haven't even touched on yet.
Like what?
We've got to talk about those V weapons. Remember those Cold War fears we talked about? Those fears of hidden Nazi technologies?
Oh, yeah. Things are about to get really interesting. Back again.
Ready to dive deeper into this whole Nazi technology thing? Right before the break, you were about to unpack the whole V-weapons mystery. The term itself, V-weapon, it just sends chills down your spine, doesn't it?
It really captures that whole Cold War vibe, that sense of dread and uncertainty. But for those who might not be familiar, can you give us a little history lesson?
All right. So picture World War II. The Nazis, they were developing all sorts of experimental weapons. They called them V for Verwundungswaffe, which basically means retaliation weapon.
And the most infamous of these were the V-1 and V-2 rockets, right?
Yeah, exactly. Those were the world's first ballistic missiles, basically, designed to strike fear into the hearts of the Allies.
And strike fear they did. I mean, those things were terrifying. I remember seeing pictures in history books, huge, deadly rockets. But everyone knew about those, right? The V-1, the V-2, those weren't secrets. So where's the mystery?
The mystery, or at least the speculation, is about the other V weapons. The ones that maybe never saw the light of day during the war. The ones that people whispered about, fueled by rumors and speculation.
Okay, so we're talking V-7s, V-8s. Were people imagining flying saucers armed with death rays?
Our sources don't go that far. But they do highlight how this whole idea of secret V weapons got tangled up with the whole flying saucer craze.
So some people believe that these weren't alien spaceships at all, but actually super secret Nazi weapons that had somehow survived the war.
You got it. And it's not hard to see why that idea took hold, right? The world had just witnessed the atomic bomb. The idea that the Nazis, with their obsession with technology, might have cooked up something even more terrifying, well, it's chilling.
Especially since they were ahead of the curve in some areas, like rocketry. They were the first with ballistic missiles. So the idea that they might have been working on something like a flying saucer, at least in theory, it's not that far-fetched.
Exactly. And don't forget the historical context here. Post-war world, everyone's paranoid. The Cold War is heating up. People were genuinely afraid of Soviet spies stealing technology, or even worse, using captured Nazi scientists and their knowledge.
It's that whole the enemy of my enemy thing, isn't it? The Nazis are gone, but now the Soviets are the big threat. And if they'd gotten their hands on some crazy Nazi superweapon?
It's a recipe for disaster.
So how do Christensen and Lima, our resident flying saucer inventors, fit into this V-weapon narrative? Did they play into those fears?
Oh, absolutely. Christensen, always the showman, claimed that the Soviets had gotten their hands on all the plans for his flying saucer, even the scientists who supposedly worked on it.
Convenient, right.
Total deflection. It was like he was saying, don't blame me if this thing actually exists and it's about to destroy the world. Blame the Soviets.
Classic Cold War blame game.
And it played perfectly into those anxieties we were talking about. Espionage, technological superiority, potential global domination. Christensen's story had it all.
It really is like a Cold War thriller, isn't it? But if Christensen was stuck in a Brazilian prison, how is he even keeping up with all the flying saucer news? Was he getting insider information from his fellow inmates?
Apparently, Christensen, despite his incarceration, still had access to newspapers. And there was this one story in particular that seemed to catch his eye. It was about Otto von Habsburg.
Otto von Habsburg? Wait, as in royalty. What's the last crown prince of Austria-Hungary doing in a conversation about flying saucers?
Well, according to Habsburg, the Soviets were using flying saucers, but not for war or domination. He believed they were using them for map making.
Map making? That's weirdly specific, so not exactly an alien invasion then.
More like high-tech cartography.
Yeah.
But still, in the context of the Cold War, even that would have raised eyebrows.
Because it's not just about having superweapons, it's about having any kind of technological edge, right? Especially when it comes to information, like maps.
Precisely. Accurate maps were incredibly valuable. Think about it. No satellite imagery back then.
So Christensen, always one step ahead, he reads this story about Soviets using flying saucers for map making, and I'm guessing he has a light bulb moment.
You know him too well. It's like he was always trying to stay one step ahead, spitting these elaborate stories, weaving in whatever scraps of information he could get his hands on. Who knows if he even believed his own stories at some point?
Maybe he just had a really good imagination.
Or maybe he was just really good at tapping into what people wanted to believe.
Yeah.
But while we're on the topic of motivations, let's not forget about Lima.
Right. Our Brazilian dentist turned flying saucer pioneer. Did he ever address this whole V weapon theory? Or was he sticking to his story about inventing the flying saucer for, you know, science?
From what we can gather, Lima was much more interested in cementing his legacy. He wanted to be remembered as the true flying saucer visionary. National pride might have played a role too.
He was playing for a bigger audience than just Cold War paranoia. He wanted to be in the history books.
Exactly. And in a way, his story highlights how powerful the allure of the flying saucer had become. It wasn't just about the mystery anymore. It was about who got the credit, who owned the narrative.
Okay, but let's be real here. As fun as these stories are, we've got to address the elephant in the room, or, well, the lack of an actual flying saucer in the room.
You're right. We've got colorful characters, intriguing narratives, historical context. But at the end of the day, there's no real evidence to support any of these claims about Nazi flying saucers.
No blurry photos of Hitler escaping his bunker in a UFO. No secret blueprints hidden in a vault. It all comes down to speculation and a few wild stories.
Which, let's be honest, are pretty entertaining on their own. But you're right, we should probably dig into some of the specifics of these stories.
Exactly. Details are everything. Let's do it. It's funny how it's always the little details, you know, the really specific stuff that sticks with you.
Totally. It's like finding a hidden clue or something, right? Like, it might not change the whole story.
But it makes it just that much more interesting.
Exactly. So, ready to dig into some of those specifics?
Oh, absolutely. Hit me with your best shot. What really jumped out at you?
Well, remember Christensen's flammable liquid weapon? And how we were talking about how vague it all seemed.
Yeah, like what even was this stuff?
Well, he actually tries to describe the propulsion system for his saucer in one of his accounts. And honestly, it makes about as much sense as the flammable liquid.
Okay, now you have to tell me. What kind of engine was powering this thing?
Get ready for this. He claimed it used two propellers.
Okay. Sounds kind of ordinary for a supposed wonder weapon.
Just wait. These propellers, they rotated in opposite directions, and supposedly, they actually created the illusion of a disc shape when the thing was in flight.
Hold on. He's saying the propellers themselves made it look like a flying saucer.
That's what he claimed. Like some early form of, I don't know, optical illusion technology.
That's right. Create it. But like, come on, with the technology they had back then, that seems pretty far-fetched.
To put it mildly, I mean, the aerodynamics alone. It just doesn't add up.
Maybe that's how Christensen managed to make these stories so believable. It's like he wasn't limited by actual science.
It's true. Those details, they really make you think twice. Or maybe we're the ones overthinking it. Like, what if Christensen was tapping into something beyond our understanding of science?
All right, now you're messing with me. But I do appreciate the reminder that it wasn't always about cold, hard facts. These stories, they were fueled by imagination, you know, and maybe even a bit of hope.
Exactly. And speaking of things that defy explanation, did you notice how Christensen never actually explained how his saucer did all the things he claimed? Like, how did it stay in the air for days at a time?
He kind of glossed over that part, didn't he?
He did mention liquid oxygen at one point, though, so maybe he was imagining some sort of advanced rocket engine.
Okay, that at least tracks. They were using liquid oxygen in rockets back then, right?
They were. But the technology was still in its early stages. To power something as big and complex as Christensen described, you'd need a ton of liquid oxygen, not to mention an engine unlike anything they had back then. Heck, even today, with all our advancement, achieving that level of endurance in an aircraft is a huge challenge.
So we're back to square one. Big claims, no real evidence.
It's a familiar pattern, but, you know, it's not just the technical details that make these stories so interesting. It's the way someone like Christensen weaves them into this whole bigger narrative, a narrative that taps into the anxieties of the time.
And then, of course, Christensen, being Christensen, he doesn't just stop at the Soviets having his flying saucer technology. He takes it a step further, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He claims they've spent all these years improving on his design,
making it even more advanced, even more dangerous.
He basically created the ultimate Cold War boogeyman, you know, a technologically superior enemy armed with weapons beyond your wildest imagination.
Like a bad dream you can't wake up from. And I love how it plays on all those anxieties we talked about. Espionage, technological advances,
global domination, the whole nine yards.
It's like a Cold War spy thriller come to life. But then you've got Lima, our Brazilian dentist, over here like, hold my drill, I invented the flying saucer first.
Right. And he doesn't seem to care about any of that Cold War stuff. He's playing a different game.
He's thinking bigger picture. He wants to be in the history books, not just the headlines.
And good for him. But as much as I love a good underdog story, I have to ask, where's the proof?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is. For all the wild stories, for all the intrigue, we're still missing that one crucial ingredient, evidence.
No blurry photos of flying saucers with swastikas on the side. No secret Nazi bases hidden in the South American jungle.
None that I've seen. It's all speculation and a healthy dose of imagination. Which, don't get me wrong, is part of what makes this whole topic so fascinating.
It's true. I mean, part of me still wants to believe that somewhere out there, maybe in some dusty old warehouse,
or a secret underground bunker.
Exactly. There's a fleet of perfectly preserved Nazi flying saucers just waiting to be discovered.
Like a compelling image, isn't it?
It is, but unfortunately, it seems like it might just be that, an image.
Maybe. But, you know, I don't think that means our journey has to end here. In fact, if anything, I think these sources, they've given us a whole new path to explore.
Now you've got me really intrigued. What are you thinking?
Well, we've been talking about these guys who claim to have invented flying saucers.
Mm-hmm.
But what if the real story isn't about invention at all? What if it's about reverse engineering?
Reverse engineering, you mean? Like someone got their hands on an actual UFO, and these stories, maybe they were a way to explain it away, to make it seem like it was just enemy technology.
Exactly. Think about it. What better way to cover up something truly extraordinary, something world-changing, than to make it seem like it came from a familiar enemy?
Especially an enemy who already has this whole mythology built around them, like the Nazis.
It's the ultimate disinformation campaign. Flood the world with stories of Nazi flying saucers so that if or when someone stumbles across the real deal,
they'll just assume it's another one of those crazy Nazi inventions.
Precisely.
That's actually kind of terrifying.
Isn't it? Makes you wonder about all the stories we tell ourselves just to make sense of things we don't understand. But hey, even if these stories about Nazi flying saucers are just that, stories, they still tell us a lot about what people were thinking and feeling back then, don't they?
They really do. We started with flammable liquid weapons and propellers creating optical illusions.
We went down this rabbit hole of Cold War paranoia and secret technologies.
And somehow we ended up questioning the very nature of what we believe and why we believe it. And honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way. It's been a wild ride, as always, and that's what I love about these deep dives with you. We don't always get answers.
But we always end up asking the right questions.
Exactly. So until next time, folks, keep those minds open, keep asking those questions, and remember,
sometimes the best discoveries are the ones we never expected to find.